Hello, my friend, and welcome to the 514th episode of the Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, the Sales Whisperer, your host. We're getting back into cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, blockchain, all that good stuff. I'm digging this. I've got a very smart individual. He's a professor at USC, chartered financial advisor. His name is Nick Battia, author of a new book, Layered Money, From Gold and Dollars to Bitcoin and Central Bank Digital Currencies. If you remember, last year, actually right around when I was coming out of COVID, did an episode on the Lords of Finance, going back to what led up to the Great Depression, how it was handled, the roles of the central banks today, and it was powerful. You know, I was a financial advisor when I got out of the Air Force, and I actually got a couple of my licenses while I was still in the Air Force. Then I got my Series 7 and 65. I had my life insurance. Eventually, I got even my property insurance license. So I've followed this space for many years. I bought my first stocks in 92. I was at Texas A&M. The Air Force had sent me there from the academy. I was with some other academy grads, and a friend of mine, Dave, knew what he was doing. And we would go to the library, the Texas A&M library, and look up books on charts and stocks and make some investments. And interesting times. I've traded commodities and individual stocks. I've traded and still own some precious metals, despite the ups and downs there. You know, when you buy early, it's easy to make money. I'm up on my crypto portfolio. So, you know, interesting guy. So I'm happy to have him on. We're going to get into some cool things. But first, let me give you a minute, a little over a minute, intro into a recent sponsor, Vidyard. Vidyard is an easy-to-use yet powerful video solution that makes it simple to create videos, host them ad-free, share them with others, and track their performance. Whether you're recording a video for one person or sharing it with the world on your website, it's easy to manage your video content. The Vidyard solution is built for business. It has robust analytics, integrations with top enterprise tools like HubSpot, and customization options that answer your unique needs. Look, email isn't dead, but it sure can be boring. Use Vidyard to record and send sales videos to connect with prospects, convert opportunities, and close deals. You can put a face to your name with video. I do this. Record your face, your screen, or both for prospecting videos, follow-ups, product demos, and more. Sign up for Vidyard free today by going to vidyard.com/whisper. And just like all of you, the team at Vidyard can't keep up with all those promo codes on podcasts and blah, blah, blah. So they're making it easy to sign up. Okay. No promo code. Just go to vidyard.com/whisper to start using Vidyard completely free. And as a bonus, get their high conversion virtual sales playbook. Vidyard.com/whisper. Professor Nick Battia, author of Layered Money, all the way from L.A. It looks like are you in your USC office?
No, I'm at home.
You're at home. Still, it just looks like a USC office.
More or less. Yeah, I got some SC paraphernalia in the background.
Nice. Well, welcome to the Sales Podcast. I'm glad you made some time.
Thanks. But thanks for having me, Wes.
So my high school friend, he was my center in high school, and he was a Trojan way back. He went there in 89 to 94. So that was when I first understood how good the Trojans were. So, you know, you're at a good spot, but you probably already know that, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'm a lifelong Trojan. I'm actually a third generation Trojan.
So oh, wow.
It goes back quite a ways in my family, and my brother just graduated medical school from USC as well. So a lot of Trojan blood running through.
Nice. Very cool. Well, I could talk football forever, but, you know, let's talk money, shall we?
Let's do it.
So I ran across you. I've got a list that I have cultivated, I guess maybe is the word, on Twitter. And I had Eric Voorhees on not too long ago. I know Eric's dad, actually. That's how I ended up meeting Eric. And my son is in the crypto space up in San Francisco. My brother-in-law has created a server farm in Dallas. my sons have been in this for probably 5 or 6 years. I told them when they were first interested, I was like, put some money in it, kids. You know, if you put some money in it, you'll pay attention. So my second son, he was in high school, and I think he put $1,200 in. So that was a pretty good chunk for 17 years old, you know, 6 years ago. And so he's been following it. And last October, I was picking on him. He's like, because Bitcoin, you know, I get dipped and it came back up. He's like, I kind of earned my money back. I think I'm going to sell. I'm like, you could sell, you know, but like, do you need the money? Well, no, not really. And like, you know, I think it's positioned to keep growing. So I send him that text every now and then. It's like, you owe your dad. Although it has come back down. But I wanted to get just your take, your understanding of this, because you're not some guy in a basement, you know, tinfoil conspiracy theorist. I mean, you're a chartered CFA, right? A certified financial, is it?
Certified financial analyst. That's right. Yeah. Sorry, chartered financial.
Chartered, analyst. Yeah. I knew I was getting it wrong. So, I mean, you're in the quote unquote real money or the old money or the legitimate money space. And yet you're going deep into Bitcoin. What led to that transition?
You know, the tinfoil stuff, you know, that's kind of when you're just starting college, right? And you're going down all those rabbit holes and reading different books that people are introducing you to and having. So I've always had, a geopolitical angle toward life, really, and, you know, just trying to analyze the way that the world works and trying to read books about history and different cultures and war and, things that shape our society. So the financial markets, to me, are right at the center of that. And so when I pursued a professional career in the markets, I still had a background in geopolitics, and it always dominated the way that I approached my research and the way that I approached my career was trying to understand what's happening holistically, not just is this asset going to go up or down in price, but why, and put that why in the context of what's going on in the world. So when I finally decided to learn about Bitcoin, because, you know, being aware geopolitically, we've been hearing about Bitcoin since 2012, quite frequently. It's been in the news since 2012, but I didn't decide to read any of those articles or actually dive into it until 2016. And when I did, I recognized that Bitcoin is a tool for freedom. It is a geopolitical instrument, and it's going to be at the center of the world's financial landscape, technology landscape, and cultural landscape for decades to come. I recognized that probably within the first 3 to 6 months of learning about Bitcoin. And ever since then, intellectually speaking, I have been all in.
I love it. I was just talking with someone this weekend, because I was equating like trying to help people understand like where we are and put it into comparison. And I was like, you know, this might be 1995, right? Telecom deregulation, the dot-com bubble is really gaining momentum. That was the first year. I mean, I got married and my wife and I got an internet account in Biloxi, Mississippi. And we chose the one that had I think it had the 56K dial-up, mm-hmm. because it was double everything else. But somebody did bring up, said, well, hell, okay, Netscape was the main player back in the day. And who knows of Netscape anymore? You know, is Bitcoin Netscape, or is Bitcoin, you know, Google in the early phases? It's going to become, you know, is it going to go away, or is it going to become the dominant player?
Yeah. And I really agree with you that I think we are in the mid 90s from that perspective. And I don't think that Bitcoin is either Netscape or Google. I think that Bitcoin is the internet. And
ooh.
That's what, so I try to get into that a little bit in my book. And people have written much deeper studies of this, but Bitcoin itself refers to two things. It refers to a software protocol, and it refers also to the unit within that software, which is the money that we think of Bitcoin as today and the money that trades versus the dollar. But really, Bitcoin is the name of a software protocol. And the word protocol is a set of rules. And the protocol level of Bitcoin can be compared to the internet protocol, the transmission communications protocol, the hypertext transfer protocol, HTTP, or the simple mail transfer protocol, which is email. The underlying layer on top of which we build communication methods or software or platforms or networks. Bitcoin is, I believe, the layer beneath everything that we're going to build on top of. And it is nuanced, and there's definitely not exact comparisons between, let's say, HTTP and Bitcoin, or other types of protocols that you like to make analogies. But I do believe that Bitcoin, it's not a company. It's just a set of rules, just like the other internet protocols that we use today.
Yeah, but you know, Warren Buffett doesn't like it, and Elon Musk is poo-pooing on it. So yeah, I think it's going to go away.
You know, it's funny when you watch these, some of these legacy people talk badly about Bitcoin, and then within a couple years, not only do they change their tune, but they're suddenly long, and they're long in their business exposure as well, just like kind of Jamie Dimon, where he comes out and says, you know, I'm going to fire anybody that's trading Bitcoin. And then a couple years later, they have the whole Bitcoin desk set up, ready to facilitate long and short positions, ready to facilitate hedging positions, and you know, treat Bitcoin just like any FX rate, really. And it's their responsibility to provide liquidity in different FX markets for their massive clients. And so, you know, eventually they'll come around and recognize this is a technology that's being used, and you might not like it, but what good did it do if you dismissed the internet in 1996 or 1997, or even in 2003? It's just, you know, that kind of standpoint fades away as time passes. So, you know, I think it's a little arrogant to come out and say, you know, Bitcoin's going to be around here for 50 years. Rather, let's just watch it unfold. It's been around for 12. I think it's safe to say the next 12 are going to be here, and let's just watch it unfold. But, you know, the long-term growth of Bitcoin's users and value on an average basis, it's following an exponential trend similar to the internet or other technologies that we've experienced.
Do you think these legacy people, and that's a great word for them, I mean, is it wishful thinking, right? Is this kind of, is it nostalgia? Do you think it's like, oh, this is, you know, it's a changing of the guard, and they don't want to let go? Because these are smart people.
Yeah.
Right. These are not fools. These are people controlling billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in the aggregate. Maybe even they can certainly move trillions of dollars of markets with their secret meetings on islands or whatever. Right. So is it arrogant? Are they gaming the system? And part of me think I'm so jaded. Right. I think Elon just wants things to plummet. He's going to scoop it up when it's lower. He's probably making his own coins anyway. I've seen things about solar powered Teslas contributing to the grid. I mean, lowering the carbon footprint, on and on. Because ultimately, I mean, Tesla's a battery. They're an energy company, really. You know, so I know he's not just, it seems like he's shooting from the hip, but he's not.
Right.
So, but like, yeah. Warren Buffett, I just read they invested, what, $500 million in some South America digital bank. So, I mean, he doesn't seem to be too much against Bitcoin. So like, what's right. driving these guys?
You know, it's a couple things. It's definitely a couple things. So I want to take Elon out of the equation for a second, because he is he's a very unique individual on this planet. Very polarizing, but I think it's, I think it's safe to say that he has like a heavy narcissism about the way that he does things, like it or hate it. And I kind of both, I kind of love it and hate it at the same time. But let's take Elon out, because what he's doing is, you know, kind of like a cult of personality and, you know, a little bit different than the rest. But in terms of the rest, the Warren Buffetts, the Jamie Dimons, I think there are a couple factors at play. Number one, they don't get Bitcoin. They think it's a virtual currency with no value or backing. Now, people that have studied Bitcoin or have identified value in Bitcoin, I believe have identified the energy, the proof of work, the mining, that and the hash rate, all these words that describe the energy security mechanism of Bitcoin. That's what we believe backs Bitcoin. It's the energy, it's the mining, it's the hash rate. And the people that, many people that say, oh, Bitcoin, it's not backed by anything, it's just a virtual, made up, make-believe currency, they haven't connected those two dots yet, where the backing is actually a computational energy network that is one of the most incredible things that's ever developed from the internet's perspective, since the internet. So that's definitely one thing. They haven't made that connection that there's something real to it. They just think it's pretend. But the other side of it is trying to protect the legacy system, trying to make sure that governments and corporations still are in control going forward, and that they're terrified of populism and the revolt of the public, in that the internet has already decentralized a lot of things and has replaced industries altogether. And governments are looking at that and they think that they are potentially next. And Bitcoin is a direct accelerant to those trends of populism and of decentralization. And that scares the power structure. So there's definitely both. And I think it's important to, when you're looking at a naysayer, to identify, is this somebody that is actually against decentralization and trying to protect the status quo of governments and corporations on this planet? Or are they potentially misinformed or underinformed? And if we explain to them what backs Bitcoin and also the empowerment angle of Bitcoin, how it's a tool for human empowerment, financial empowerment, and we expose them to that, maybe they will recognize the value in it. And then you have this kind of third group of people that, you know, they think that they're all about financial empowerment, but they don't actually ever step in the shoes of anybody outside of the United States or Western Europe. And therefore, they can't physically imagine why anybody would want a currency that's not backed by a government, because they haven't walked through the towns of countries, cities that have dumpster fire currency regimes, you know, rampant corruption in government, and all these types of things. So it's a long answer, but it's, let you know, when we're looking at the legacy system and the people in it, let's not rush to judgment and think that they are either, you know, trying to just protect their wealth and their power, or that they are, you know, software illiterates. And mm-hmm. and have the conversation. I tried to write Layered Money to bring people from both of those worlds and, you know, explain Bitcoin in a simple way.
Right. I mean, when you say, you know, Warren Buffett doesn't understand something, I mean, that in my mind, I mean, that boggles my mind, because that's willful ignorance, right? Because this guy, he can get the 10 smartest people on any subject on the planet to call him today. Right. So if he doesn't understand it, that tells me he just doesn't want to understand it.
It's a few years ago, I think that it was excusable. And I'm giving myself a pass here, because for 3 years, I was that guy that just dismissed it. And
But that was for 3 years, starting at the beginning. We can't follow every new thing, right? I mean, we do have to let either a natural inclination or fortune, you know, timing or whatever, things cross our paths, you know? So we do have to give it a little bit of time.
Right.
But at this point, for somebody like Warren Buffett to say what he says, I don't understand it.
And I have to agree with you, Wes. I actually think that 2021 is the point of no return now. And a news item like what happened in El Salvador this month, and it actually makes it now no longer excusable, because now you actually have a head of state sitting down and explaining his decision and the country's decision to introduce this new digital currency as legal tender and the financial empowerment aspect of it. And so if you're Warren Buffett and you are willfully ignoring a head of state and, you know, trying to explain why he did this for his people, now I think you've lost your excuse, and we're really past that point of no return. But over the past couple of years, and even up until last year, when Bitcoin still hadn't surpassed $20,000 and was still kind of in this post third bubble, hangover from the mainstream perspective, I still gave him a pass, like, you know, but now you cross 20,000. So the bubble talk has to go away, and then you cross El Salvador, and now the financial empowerment narrative steps right into the front and center. And now it's too late. Now it's not excusable. And from a personal standpoint, I wrote Layered Money so that you don't have an excuse anymore to just dismiss this empowerment tool for the rest of the populace. It's non-inclusive, and it's now ignorant, and it's not appropriate either. And actually, politicians, they need to recognize this now, that the excuses that they might have had 2 or 3 years ago, they don't hold anymore. And if you're taking an anti-Bitcoin stance, you're all of a sudden exposing yourself as a very non-inclusive type of person.
Well, I think they do understand it. And I think they're afraid of it. I think our politicians are afraid of it, because, you know, taxation is where they get their power, right? You know, follow the money. I think it's propaganda. I think it's psyops, or like keep the people down till we figure this thing out, because everything that's going on, people don't understand the Federal Reserve. People don't know the difference between a silver certificate and a Federal Reserve note. You know, I love it when they say, Bitcoin's not backed by anything. I'm like, what's your dollar backed by? Well, the full faith and credit of the United States. I'm like, do you have faith in the United States government? Like, I don't. I was educated by them over there. I mean, I gave them 9 years of my life. I don't trust them. Oh, man.
And what I will say, Wes, is that I think that the institutions have to protect themselves from Bitcoin, but the people are still Americans. And I put more of the optimist hat on when it comes to the people themselves. The institutions, my goodness, I mean, they have demonstrated oppression in different ways for so long. And so I fully recognize that, and the institution wanting to protect itself from the Federal Reserve's perspective, from the media. When you talk about psyops, psyops are part of what intelligence organizations do to protect themselves. That television anchor, though, are we going to hold that television anchor responsible, even if he or she, and especially if he or she might actually be long Bitcoin, but still reading the script? Mm-hmm. So I want to see people engage with each other And that is really, I think, what decentralization is about. It's bringing people and into a network together and eliminating the middleman, which is media, government, both. And PSYOPs keep people separated as part of its goal.
Sure.
And I have studied that. I have studied how, you know, scripts are written in the Pentagon and things like that. It's all part of protecting the institution. But I have a lot of optimism when it comes to Americans, global citizens, and people that want to help empower other people. Mm-hmm. So I think Bitcoin is here to stay, and that's why I'm out here talking about it.
Nice. So what's the meaning of your title? So you said layered money, from gold and dollars to Bitcoin and central bank digital currencies. What are the layers?
The meaning of the title is that while the everyday person might look at his or her checking account balance, the paper cash that they have in their pocket, their Venmo balance on their iPhone, or their brokerage account in their 401k in a money market fund, and they might think all those things are money, and they don't differentiate between them. They're like, I have money in this account, I have money in my pocket, I have money in that, you know, US Treasury fund, and it's all money. Now, they might be correct in that all those forms of money are money to them. But in reality, those forms of money fall into a hierarchy. And that hierarchy is determined by the balance sheet that the instruments themselves come from. So your Wells Fargo checking account dollars, your Federal Reserve notes in your pocket, your Venmo balance, or your JP Morgan Treasury money market fund, they all have different counterparties, and they all have different positions in this order of money. And when push comes to shove, if Wells Fargo gets murdered by the US government, and you have over the FDIC insured amount in your checking account, your money is gone. And in that case, if you had paper cash issued by the Federal Reserve, you would have kept your money, because that cash is of a higher order versus your Wells Fargo checking account. And so in that way, our money falls into this layered system in which there's a hierarchy to the things that we own. And I didn't invent the concept of the hierarchy of money. I borrowed it from economics a professor named Perry Merling. He wrote a paper called The Inherent Hierarchy of Money in 2012, which I cite in my book, and I reference work a few times. But when he introduced that framework, he hadn't told the story of it or the history of it. And that's what I attempted to do with layered money, is take this framework of hierarchy of balance sheets and hierarchy of monetary instruments, and tell the whole story, go back as far as I needed to, and tell a story that went through gold coins, gold certificates, government currencies, commercial banks, and then eventually the elimination of gold from the hierarchy altogether. And that's the system that we have today. The dollar system itself is a hierarchy in which the top layer is U.S. government debt itself, another credit instrument. So a very twisted evolution of money that we have experienced. And the story really hadn't been told. The history of money, the history of finance has been told, and markets maybe had been told, but the history of money markets themselves, it hadn't been told like this. And so that's what I attempted to do in the book. And I really wanted to set all that up so that we could see Bitcoin is independent of the current layered structure. It is a new completely novel type of first layer money that doesn't have any link to the legacy system. And that it was an important line to draw and motivated me to tell the story in that way.
How much time should people spend learning the lingo, you know, hash rate and mining and there's so many. I spend twice as much time reading these threads because half the post I'm Googling and like, okay, what is
and
that?
Good on you for doing that. Yeah, because it, you know, it's tough to answer. Let me just tell, you know, personal thing. In the financial markets, as I was trying to get jobs and, you know, seek roles and advance my career, one of the things that did not let me pursue certain avenues was my lack of ability to program in Visual Basic, MATLAB, R, or SQL, let's say, four languages that I've actually taken classes in and tried to do myself very poorly, but it's not my skill set. And why is that? Because I made a conscious decision when I was younger that even though I recognize that software programmers are going to get the majority of the jobs over the next several decades, I need to put my energy into being a great geopolitical and macroeconomic researcher, and I'll be able to add value through that angle. So if you have a career that you're already adding value, do you need to, you know, understand the depths of Bitcoin mining? Maybe not. But if you're a young person, come on, read this book. It's called Mastering Bitcoin by Andreas Antonopoulos. It's a computer science textbook. I read it. I did not understand about a third of it, but I did my best to understand the other two thirds. And now I'm in a position that I understand how the Bitcoin software works better than most. And you learn about what mining is, and you learn about one-way cryptography. And you also learn that Bitcoin didn't just come out of thin air, that there's, you know, several decades of computer science that prefaced it. And you can understand by reading, and there's a great shorter version called Inventing Bitcoin by Jan Pritzker, a colleague of mine that wrote a phenomenal kind of shorter version. You've got to understand what one-way cryptography is, what mining is, just on a basic level to recognize the value of Bitcoin and its power to change. And so if you're a young person, I don't think there's any excuse. You got to pick up a book. You gotta understand what Bitcoin mining is, and what one-way cryptography is. Those two things are kind of the two basic building blocks to understanding what is a cryptocurrency. What does that word even mean? What is blockchain? Blockchain is a chain of blocks. Well, what are blocks, and how do they become chained together? Mining. And so, you know, the word chain needs to be understood. You have to understand what the word chain means, and you got to work backwards from it. I tried to do this a little bit in chapter 7 of Layered Money, where I explain what the word blockchain means. And it does have to do with Bitcoin mining.
So you keep throwing around this term young people. Am I in that list?
Oh, absolutely.
I got gray here. Does that count?
You're young, Wes, because you read the threads, you're on Twitter, you're researching, your mind is still working.
All right, good.
Your mind is still working, man.
Oh, I think it is. Can you remind my kids of that? I'm going to send them this interview, all right?
Do it.
So where should someone focus? I mean, Bitcoin... you know, if Bitcoin is the internet, what is Ethereum? Is it, I don't even know the analogy. Is it a fax machine? Is it, no, it's not a fax. Is it, What is it? Is it a protocol on top of the internet?
Well,
or is it an alternate internet?
Ethereum definitely is a protocol. It's a software. And then people have also identified it as money. I haven't done that. I haven't been able to identify why the value accrues to the monetary unit of Ethereum. And that's independent of the fact that people are using the Ethereum software to do things on the internet. And so maybe that's why value accrues to that token. But it's not my course of study. I have identified why I believe value accrues to Bitcoin, the token. And that is because it is the representation of the human interaction with gold in the digital universe. In this way that we as a human species identified gold as the consensus highest value monetary physical item that we could come up with. And I believe Bitcoin is fulfilling that role. But it's clear that many software protocols will continue to exist, and will have value assigned to them by the market. Ethereum's market value is over $300 billion today. So even though I can't identify the value, the reason to own it, and that's why I don't own any of it, that doesn't mean other people haven't been able to identify it. They have, and they do. And I think that that's okay, because the market will eventually tell them whether they're right or wrong. So I express my positions I express my opinions by my positions, and other people are doing that as well. And they are assigning, several hundred billions of dollars worth of value to Ethereum and other cryptocurrency assets.
So you think Bitcoin still has some room to grow then, huh?
Absolutely. It's the consensus value storage mechanism for approximately 100 million people. So, we know that there are about 5 billion internet users today. So forget the 8 billion people, but let's just focus on the 5 billion, internet users. And I believe that 3 to 4 of those billion are social network users within that 5 billion. So we're talking about a minimum of 3 billion people that are familiar with internet networks. And Bitcoin is that. So when do they download their first Bitcoin wallet onto their iPhone? To me, it's a matter of time, because the social network apps are already on that phone. And so their brains have already been programmed to use internet-based networks.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin is the exact, like when you use Bitcoin, I really encourage people that have never purchased Bitcoin, bought Bitcoin or whatever, do yourself a favor, buy 10 to 20 bucks worth on your favorite, maybe Cash App is a good one that actually lets you take Bitcoin off of it. Buy 20 bucks worth of Bitcoin, download an iPhone wallet, a Bitcoin wallet, Blockstream. The Blockstream company makes a good one called Green that you could try out, and practice sending yourself Bitcoin from your exchange to yourself. And then tell your friend to download a different wallet, send them some money, have them send it back to you, $2-3 at a time, and learn and use Bitcoin. And then you'll realize, wow, it's just like emailing money to each other. It's just like Venmo, but there's no company. There's no PayPal. There's no dollar. It's just this digital unit. Mm-hmm. And, it's mind-blowing to use it for the first time.
Yeah.
And I remember, like it was yesterday, sending myself the first, I think, $2.30 transaction from my exchange to my own wallet. And I was just like, wow, this is something special. This is different. It's like email. It's really easy. It's like a social network for money that doesn't have any company involved. And so I think that it's going to be very obvious the second people start using it. And guess what? 100 million people already have. So yes, a long way to go for Bitcoin, because it's very natural. I think it's very natural as an evolution.
I remember 15 years ago or so, like my father-in-law, like, I'm not using PayPal, you know, it's like, it's not real, some online bank, you know, and now of course he uses it. And he and my mother-in-law, they Venmo to my wife, you know, they all get squared up. We go to dinner where they'll pick groceries up for one another and they're just swapping Venmo. You know, and they're in their 70s, you know, piece of cake, sending money to my mom, PayPal and Venmo. So it's, and it was a little bit daunting when I was first walked through this, getting a MetaMask wallet and Chrome and this and that. And, you know, but it is getting easier and easier. I mean, literally every day it's getting easier. But, you know, conversely, I've owned gold since 2002. I don't trade it. It's a store of value. I got it sitting there. And hell, that may no longer become a store value. Who knows, right? But I got a little bit of it. But I like holding on to it. We don't understand our own biases, right? My son, you know, he's a computer programming major, computer science. And I remember he was telling me a few years ago, do a Google search for computer programmer, look up an image, you know, and it's skewed by a bunch of white dudes writing code in Silicon Valley. It's not racist or whatever. It's just, they look around at each other and go, oh, well, we're computer dudes. So we'll find an image. And that's what a computer dude looks like. But then it's like, well, I don't know. You got a 100 million of them that are Chinese, you know, another 100 million of them that are Indian. So maybe we should broaden the spectrum of what a computer programmer looks like, right? So just little things like that, you go, oh yeah. Like, just because we have it easy, you know, I've traveled to India and Latin America, and I've seen poverty in these people, but they still have smartphones. And if they could trade money, I remember when my son, he's 24 now, and he was, I don't know, maybe 16, 17. And you know, it's text, text, text. I'm like, dude, why don't you answer your phone when I call you? Oh, we don't use it like that. Like, what the hell is the use of having the smartphone? He's like, for the apps. Mm-hmm. I remember going, oh, hell, there's a paradigm shift, you know? So it's like, okay, I better figure out these apps, because that is the future and it has already arrived.
Right.
And I feel like that's what's happening here.
And, you know, I wrote Layered Money in part to show people that Venmo and Bitcoin are not the same thing at all. And that Bitcoin derives almost none of its value from being easy to send on the internet, because we already have Venmo for that. Like, you and your spouse and her parents, and when you guys Venmo money to each other, you're not going to use Bitcoin. Venmo is free. It's instant. The bill was in dollars. The transfer's in dollars. It's easy. You don't need Bitcoin for any of that. And actually, Bitcoin is not worth $600 billion as a network because it's really easy to send on the internet. It's actually worth that much because it is a non-government currency and the first one ever to achieve that. And I believe that that's where a lot of the value comes. And so we do have to understand the difference between Venmo and Bitcoin, even though they can feel very similar to each other, you know, when you use them on an iPhone.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, let's leave it there, shall we? I'm linking to your Twitter profile. I'm linking to layeredmoney.com for your book. It's sold everywhere, right? Amazon, Audible, Apple, Barnes & Noble. I recommend, encourage folks to follow you. Time Value of BTC. So when did you create that?
Time Value BTC account was created in
May
2018
2018, yep.
when I wrote an article called The Time Value of Bitcoin about the Lightning Network, which is a payment layer on built on top of Bitcoin. And the idea of layered Bitcoin started, way back then. And I had been on Twitter for years, just in the shadows and following. But when I wrote that article, I did want to go public and share it with the world, and I'm very thankful I did.
So is USC going to beat UCLA this year?
The recruiting is starting to pick up again at SC. It has been a tough slog. I really, since Pete Carroll left, there's just been a hangover and, scandal and a lot of turnover at the university, on the admin side. So kind of as Trojans, we're all ready to kind of get past that, but it's been a struggle to find that identity. And, Coach Helton, I respect him a lot, but he's not bringing the, the fan base, truly together to rally around him. So, we'll wait and see.
I hear you. I'm a college football fan. My LSU Tigers, very high highs, very low lows. Back-to-back seasons. So you never know what to expect.
Absolutely.
A friend of mine, this guy I was reading, he was talking about, because we beat each other up on football. And, it's like the Alabama fans, they just expect to always win. It's like LSU, we don't know what we're going to get. So, I mean, we got to show up drunk either way, because if it's a bad game, we need to drown our sorrows. And if it's a good game, we're celebrating. So,
Well, Wes, I have the curse of the Alabama fans. Well, I actually think we're going to win the ship every August. So, I expect it. And then for the last, decade plus, it's just been a lot of disappointment. So I'm like giving up after, the 1-2 starts. And,
Oh, I know.
but,
And I'm so bummed because Nick Saban, he became famous at LSU, right?
I
And he had to
know,
go to the NFL. Oh,
absolutely.
for a year and a half. Man, now I need to go drink. All right. Well, we'll end on a good note, right? Layeredmoney.com. Go get the book. Go follow Nick. I appreciate you coming on the show, man. It's been great.
Thanks, Wes. I appreciate your time and hope to do it again soon.
All right, man. Have a great day.
Take care.
It's easy to poo-poo and criticize something you don't know. I think it was Niels Bohr, physicist, Nobel Prize winner back in, I don't know, early 1900s. We talked about how, average minds lock onto one idea and disparage the others. Great minds can hold two apparently conflicting ideas in their brain and consider them simultaneously without going crazy. If you don't understand Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and blockchain, if you can't discuss hash rates and how the fundamentals of, the ledger system, how that works, if you can't explain DeFi, right? DeFinance, if you can't explain or understand the benefits of decentralization, then you probably should hold off criticizing this crypto space. There are some smart minds, knee-deep in this space. Its time has come. I encourage you, put $100 into it, $500, a little bit to learn it. Man, it's been almost a year now. I was considered late to the game, right? But setting up a MetaMask and creating accounts at various, Binance and Coinbase and BlockFi, and it's learning what stable coins are, how to set those up, and how to make acquisitions of various cryptocurrencies. It's not as easy as banking, but consider, going back 10 years, 15 years, working with PayPal, trying to get those buttons embedded on your websites. You could get payment online. I remember my father-in-law, "Oh, I'll never do digital banking." We're doing PayPal and Venmo to one another all the time. As a matter of fact, I just sent my mom money on PayPal, literally before I hit record on this, you know, intro outro. So that's become standard. You know, that's when opportunities arise, when you see something that has a benefit, but it's too hard to use or complicated. That's a problem that can be solved. And why not you be the one to solve it and make money off of it? So instead of ridiculing something and criticizing it, take a step back and say, hey, you know, how does this really work? What's the short-term and long-term ramifications of this? Where's the opportunity? And, you know, governments are afraid of decentralized finance. The powers that be, you know, if you go back at Lords of Finance, those guys didn't know what they were doing. They were winging it. And you see guys distracted. I mean, we know now FDR had his little side women. We know that some of the other central bankers, they had their dalliances, had their health issues. They would literally just disappear for months at a time back when you could in the early 1900s, leaving things to their underlings. They, you know, the experts are not quite as smart as you might think they are. So dive in, okay? Buy some books. Listen to other podcasts. Follow some of these guys on Twitter. Get layered money. Start understanding what's really going on. And you know what? Maybe it's not right. Maybe it's all wrong. But you need to get educated on it to make an informed decision why it is, instead of saying, well, Elon Musk just, you know, Saturday Night Live said it wasn't any good. Like, come on. All these guys are playing us. They're strategic thinkers. So, you know, like Wayne Gretzky, right? Skate to where the puck is headed. You know, where are these guys going? Consider that first. All right. So listening to podcasts like this, following authors and pioneers in the space will get you educated. So even if you decide no, then you can do so with confidence and with great comfort. All right. If you need to sell and market with more confidence, hit me up. TheSalesWhisperer.com. Go to the Contact Us. Or join our sales group, sellmoreofeverything.com. And you join month to month or commit for a year to yourself and get a couple months free. All right? Sellmoreofeverything.com. Thanks for listening. Now go sell something.